Don't be upset at when a door closes that you're not expecting. And don't be upset that something's not going your way, because a door is going to open and there will be a new experience that's going to be just as or more fruitful than what you thought your first experience would be. It taught me a lot more than that too, and we can go into it, but it taught me first and foremost that failure is okay. Failure is definitely okay.
Hi, I'm Mark Gagne.
And I'm Chris Corcoran, and you're listening to Tech Sales is for Hustlers. Tech Sales for Hustlers is a podcast where we catch up with Memory Blue alums and reminisce about their start in high-tech sales with us.
Let's go get some, Corcoran.
Gagne, you know I'm ready.
Today, we have a very special guest with us from downtown San Francisco. This gentleman played rugby at the University of Oregon, and when he started at Memory Blue, like many of you, he was not sure exactly what we did. Anton Cardenas.
Thank you so much for having me, boys. I appreciate it. Mark and Chris, it's a pleasure. Excited to do this. I listen to podcasts all the time, and being on the other end of the microphone, I guess you could say, is going to be very special.
The quack attack.
Go Ducks. Yes, sir.
All right. Well, good. Anton, I forgot to throw this in. Currently, senior account executive at Samsara, yes?
Yes, this is true. I was moved up to a senior account role February 1st, so very recently. I went through that transition.
The listeners need to know that this is a rescheduled podcast taping. And the reason why is because Anton had to conduct some business and close a deal out. Congratulations, Anton, on closing that deal. And we're happy to accommodate your official business.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, I messaged Caroline at the last minute and I was trying to get the owner of this company on the line for a while. He was giving me that guy to talk to, finally reached back out to me and I said I couldn't let it up. It was a good intro to the weekend, but I thank you guys for accommodating. And then this morning too, I forgot that Central time is not the same as Eastern time and Pacific time is completely different. But here we are. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, man. Well, let's get to it. So you bounced from us in April of 2017. Mm-hmm. So it'll be 4 years in April. Before we get to Samsara, before we talk about Memory Blue, we'd like the audience to get to know you a little bit about you, like growing up. I think you've got a pretty cool story. So tell us a little bit about you growing up. We'll try to start from there.
Yeah, absolutely. First and foremost, I think that for the people listening at Memory Blue, for the SDRs, and I have a question. Do you guys make them listen to this as a task or something that they need to accomplish? Or is it like up to them?
It's up to them.
The only thing we make the SDRs Blue do is blitz and did I catch it at a bad time?
Yes.
And the phrase that pays.
What's the phrase that pays? I didn't have that.
Uh-oh. This is West Coast Cali. In addition to what we spoke about on this call, prospect, what else would you like us to talk? Yeah, see, you know what
there
it is.
There we go. Yeah. Well, get on Joe Reeves for not telling me what the phrase that pays, because that's new to me, but I like it. Yeah.
All right. But a lot of them listen to it. Keep going.
Yes. I just think that I was in such a crazy transition in my life when I started Memory Blue, where I was trying to make dials and book meetings where I didn't take the time to do things like this and listen to people that have gone through the process successful or maybe had a different experience. It's a pleasure to be able to share my story. So I just want to lead with that. So a little bit about me. I lived most of my life in Fremont, California, East Bay. So I was actually born in Arizona. My mom, she was a Filipino citizen and she was pregnant with me at 9 months, covered me in a couple jackets, flew to Arizona to see her sister, had me, and then flew back to the Philippines. So I was able to get citizenship. It was pretty special, really awesome experience. I don't really remember it. I was a kid, obviously, but my mom is a warrior for doing that. So I lived in the Philippines and Hong Kong.
Hold on. Your mom was I love reading stories. Your mom was 9 months pregnant, got on a plane from the Philippines.
Yeah.
Came to the United States.
Yep.
Delivered.
Had me. Yep.
Had you. Then went back?
We went back. Yep. Her sister
lived. She's a badass.
Badass. Yeah. No, my mom's a legend. And I think at this part of the podcast, when she listens to it, there won't be a dry eye in the house, but she thought to herself that it would be better for me to have this experience as a citizen and take that risk. Yeah, hats off to her.
That's amazing.
Love you, Mom.
Dude, she's great. This will make her laugh. I want to apologize for me butchering the pronunciation of your last name.
Try it.
I can't do it. Chris, you try it.
You could do it.
Cardenas.
There you go. Your turn, Mark.
I can't do it. I'm not going to do it. Let's move on. All right. You went back to the Philippines. When did you come back here?
So I came back to the United States when I was 5 or 6 years old. So still fairly young. I'm just starting to create memories and know things. And that's when we moved to Fremont. And I lived in 4740 Touchstone Terrace. I love that spot. We're actually remodeling our kitchen this weekend. Big changes for my family. Yeah. And so went to school in Fremont. then went to Moreau Catholic High School. And that's where I met my fiance, and she's working at Google now, and she's a software engineer over at Google Maps. So that's pretty fun. If you ever use Google Maps, you can think of me and how maybe I distract her from work. I then went to University of Oregon, played rugby there, and honestly had no idea what I even wanted to do with like my career. So I started as a journalism major, and journalism. I was good at writing. I guess I'm a good conversationalist, and maybe I thought I'd go into reporting or investigation or delivering some sort of stories to people. But it was that kind of love for conversation and discussion that I did. So I thought, okay, journalism would be the move. And I remember having a conversation with my dad coming home from, I think it was my sophomore year. And I said, and my dad's like, do you really want to do this? Is it something you want to do? And I thought to myself, I actually don't know. So that's when I changed to business. And my first job while still in college during summer breaks was at the Apple store in Stanford selling iPads, iPhones, MacBooks, selling headphones, selling accessories. To me, I was just the coolest 18, 19-year-old kid with an awesome job wearing the blue shirts. So little did I know that I was dipping my foot into sales, into conversations, and even, like I said, when we discussed before, like field sales, and I'm shaking hands, I'm doing a deal in person. Had no idea. I was just having fun with it. It was something that I enjoyed, and I just didn't know that that was actually an open door to something that I'm doing today. So changed to business. It was fantastic. University of Oregon was the best experience. I went through the community college route too. So anyone that did community college or anyone that's thinking of doing community college, I highly encourage it. It was a great place for me to, one, be humbled, because out of high school, I got denied by a lot of colleges. So I had to go through the community college route. And while all my friends were wearing their college jackets senior year of high school, I didn't have one. Do not feel discouraged. Anyone that went that route, do not feel like it is not successful, because you can absolutely, one, save a ton of cash. And two, you have time to really develop yourself as your own individual, right? You're not at this big, huge university following the freshman experience. You're doing your own thing. So I did that. I went to De Anza and Cupertino. Such a great experience there when I didn't even think of that. Then obviously went to Oregon, did business school, graduated from there, and then went to Memory Blue, and the rest is history. And again, the first day of Memory Blue, I had no idea what Memory Blue did. I had no idea that Memory Blue served clients. I didn't even know that. I had no idea. It was the start of an amazing adventure.
How did you even find out about Memory Blue?
Your recruiters were on LinkedIn. I remember on LinkedIn, and I forgot the name of the recruiter that I talked to. She was great. She was fantastic and got me on board.
All right. So what do you remember from starting? Because you weren't with us for all that long. We'll get to that too.
So I remember the first day I came about an hour early to work. And I was outside in the cold for super long, and I didn't really know which door to go in. It was like the first day of freshman year of high school, but in the professional level. And I had no idea what door to go in. I was completely lost. And lo and behold, Justin Henry walks up, and yep, Jay Hen, probably wearing his Seahawks lumberjack hat right now. Yeah. He walks up, lets me up. It's my first day. And honestly, I don't know if you guys are ever going to change this, but the cubicles are kind of intimidating. You come in and there's just walls of cubicles everywhere. You don't see anyone. And yeah, that was my first experience. I sit down and I'm just sitting there. My heart's racing. Not even a computer in front of me. I'm just on my phone pretending to be productive. And then obviously be going to the first kickoff meeting. But yeah, I just remember my tension and my energy was so high, but I had nowhere to give that energy or talk to anyone. And then obviously Jeannie and Joe were coming. And Joe came in wearing his sunglasses. And I remember it was like dark outside still, but he was still wearing his sunglasses. And this guy, I just knew from the start, this guy is a grinder. What's up, Joe? I miss you, man.
Love that guy.
I remember that was my first day.
Hey, Anton, and so you were commuting
a lot.
Share for the listeners just what sort of commute you were looking at on a daily basis that you did twice a day, every day.
Yeah, wow. I'll back up there a little bit. So graduate high school, I have to go to De Anza, right? I drive from Fremont, California to Cupertino, which is about 35, 40 minutes. From Cupertino, I drive up to Palo Alto to the Apple store. From Palo Alto, I cross the bridge, go back to Fremont. It's a triangle from East Bay to South Bay to kind of peninsula Palo Alto area. And I was doing that when I was 18. So I was already used to driving a lot and putting thousands of miles on my car frequently. First car was a 02 Subaru Impreza. Love that car. And so I come back from college. I only have to drive from Fremont to San Jose. No, well, it's not too bad. Until I do it with the rest of the Bay Area, Silicon Valley at 7:30 a.m. On a good day, Chris, it'd take me an hour. I think I would say an hour on a good day to get from my front door to Memory Blue front door. On a bad day, it was like an hour 30, maybe even more than that.
Wow. Sure. And that's just one way.
Just one way. Exactly. So I would leave the office at 5 o'clock, I think, the time that we head out. And yeah, I wouldn't be getting home until 6:30. Luckily, living with my parents for a little bit before I got my own spot, there was dinner prepared and things like that. But I just remember, wow, straight from college, right into the grind of life and just dove in head first.
So I mentioned on the intro that you didn't really know what we did. As you get going, when did you make the full realization?
So the full realization was the next day, Tuesday. I think this is still the most awesome thing that you guys do is how sometimes if the client allows it, they actually go on site. So Monday, they say, Anton, you're going to be assigned to Mobile Iron. And I'm like, Mobile what? What is this? I thought I worked for Memory Blue. Who is this Mobile Iron? I thought that Genie is my boss. Throughout the course of the Monday, I find out that what Memory Blue does is, and I'm speaking to the choir here, is make calls and source meetings for other companies that are hiring Memory Blue. And this was the first time, and this is honestly my fault for not preparing, that I'm knowing about this. So I'm like, wow, so I work for Memory Blue and they're paying me my paycheck. You know, shout out Chris and Mark. But I am answering, honestly, to the SDR manager over at Mobile Iron. So Tuesday rolls around and it's my second day on the job. And I'm now having to go to a new office on my second day. So I'm basically having two first days back to back. And I'm like, wow, what did I sign up for? This is insane. So I get to Mobile Iron and Andy Gager is there.
Andy, yep.
And Andy Gager is there. And Janae Cambra is there.
Yep.
And wow. Caitlin Garish is there. Another duck, absolutely. Caitlin and I randomly ran into each other in New York. Imagine of all cities in the world to run into each other. And I'm missing another person. I know Jessica Hollinger, she was at Memory Blue with me. But yeah, so I run into these great individuals and I'm having a second first day back to back. And that's when I find out this is going to be basically my team. Memory Blue is the unit where I'm learning the processes, learning the skill set. But this is my team that I'm going to be working with and delivering for this publicly traded company. I'm like, wow, mm-hmm. This is my second day on the job and I'm working at a publicly traded company, working with my fingers quoted because I'm not hired out yet. But yeah, and all of a sudden I find out, wow, I'm really making a difference here. And I'm working for a company that Memory Blue set me up with. So that's when it kicked in. Wednesday comes around, I have my feet and my bearings. But now I look back at it, what a crazy first 2 days. That was nuts.
It's a whirlwind.
It is.
And you're thrown into it. And then this is this example of dedication. I know we talked about the commute, but that's a big deal because you start to get into this job, which is a very difficult job and learn how to do it. Then you got to get and face traffic and come home. That in itself says a lot about your motivation. But let's talk a little bit about the job. So you mentioned about Joe Reeves and Joe Reeves being a grinder. So tell us a little bit more about that. Did he teach you some of that or someone else did or what?
Absolutely. In the San Jose Memory Blue office, I don't know if you guys change the layout. So you walk in and you have the kitchen on your left. You have the cubicles right there. Yeah. The first row of cubicles that back in the day when I was there, that first row was like storage. There was a printer there. There was open desk. It was kind of a little bit unorganized. Second row. Yeah. Boom. Those were all of the individuals. You turn left. Joe Reeves is you turn left. Joe Reeves there on the left and my desk is next to him. And at this point, he actually wasn't a manager yet. He was just an SDR and I was his mentee. He was my mentor. That was the program that we had. He came in every day, protein bottle, shaking, drinking it. And I'm like shaking and not a word. Just comes to the desk, sits down and he almost like hit the protein shaker on the desk like a gavel in a courtroom, right? Time to get to work. I'm really sitting there like wondering every day and I'm wondering what the deal is with this guy. And I remember this on Wednesday, right? So Monday's busy. It's my first day. Tuesday, I'm gone. Wednesday, I'm sitting there. It's my first day on the job, really. And he comes back. He pulls his chair back a little bit, looks at me. He goes, Anton, I'm going to be hard on you. I'm not going to be easy on you. I'm going to be really hard on you. And I'm like, wow, is it supposed to be like this? Am I supposed to be intimidated right now or motivated? I don't know. Long story short, Joe really was dedicated to bringing metrics and bringing results for his client, right? Whether it was sourcing a demo in a meeting, which is the highest level that a Memory Blue SDR can provide, or it's just being able to bring value in some way. And he was always thinking of how to do that. And it always started with coming in, making his calls when he needed to, following up with a specific email, bringing value to that email. And I realized that while other people in the office maybe, and not speaking down on anyone, people were going through the motions, there was intention to everything that Joe did. And there was intention to the process that he had, even if it seemed insane at sometimes, right? Like, dude, you already made 120 calls. Like, do we need to do more? And he says, well, the more work you put in now, the more rewards you get later on. And I would find him. He knew how to have fun. And he's a work hard, play hard kind of dude. And I found that I think he enjoyed that playing side more because he was able to work hard and kind of validate that enjoyment that he had, that he still does. And I think I brought that into my professional career where if I grind from 8 to 5 and I put in the time, I know that, hey, at the end of the day, if I got a lot of no's and I didn't really have the best productivity day numbers wise, but I did the best that I could, I know that I'm still setting myself up for success. And I'm laying the foundation for being able to bring my best every day. And even though sometimes you're not getting the results you want, if you know that you put the work in, that you will get those results eventually. And he definitely taught me that for sure.
That's good to hear.
Anton, what did rugby teach you?
Wow, that's a great question. My story with rugby, this is how it went. So I grew up here in the Bay Area not playing rugby. I didn't play rugby. I loved contact sports. I played ice hockey growing up. That was my go-to sport, ice hockey. And I played at a competitive level. I played for a club team called the Santa Clara Blackhawks, if anyone's familiar. They compete with the Junior Sharks, things like that. And so I went to Oregon, and it's a club hockey team, right? So I went to go play, and unfortunately, the club hockey team costs out of my pocket around $2,000, $2,500 per season. And I just couldn't afford that. And at this time, I was paying for college on my own rent and my own food and everything like that. I was pretty independent. Plus, obviously had to support myself to help the family, and I just couldn't afford that. And so my buddies in Southern California, they joined the rugby team at their university. They loved it. And I ended up saying, okay, the rugby team is a lot less expensive. It still has that physical aspect. There's still camaraderie with the boys. And it was a Pac-12 league. So we were traveling up and down, still playing the best schools. And I tried out. I walked on. I made the team. The rest is history. So what did rugby teach me? It taught me, first off, from the get-go, that I needed to fail at something and not have the resources to do something that I love, like ice hockey, to open experiences and open doors to try something new. And some of my best friends in life came from the rugby team. And we talk every day and we see each other maybe once every 2 months. So I still keep so close to them. But I think the first thing it taught me was don't be upset at when a door closes that you're not expecting. And don't be upset that something's not going your way, because a door is going to open and there will be a new experience that's going to be just as or more fruitful than what you thought your first experience would be. It taught me a lot more than that too, and we can go into it, but it taught me first and foremost that failure is okay. Failure is definitely okay.
What else did it teach you?
It taught me to toughen up. It taught me to go through physical pain. Sophomore year, I guess I can't show a picture to the audience. In my sophomore season, we were playing University of Washington in Seattle. It was almost the end of the game. I had the ball. And in rugby, you're not allowed to just drop a shoulder and hit someone. That's not allowed. It's something that you can get a huge penalty for. You need to wrap up. When you say wrap up, you need to use your arms, tackle in a safe manner. That's why nowadays football coaches in America are teaching kids to tackle in the rugby way, because it's safer and it's actually more efficient to get the player down. Long story short, I have the ball and a player comes on the University of Washington side. He drops his shoulder right into my face, into my orbital bone. So I break my skull in 3 places, right beside my left eyes, broken the top of my nose and the top of my orbital. And then I had a fracture in my jaw. So my face was broken on the same play. I broke my toe on the same play. It was brutal. And that was my sophomore season.
Did you score?
No, absolutely not. I got rocked. I got blasted off the sideline. But again, see, that was an illegal move by the player to not wrap up. He lowered his shoulder. The boys had my back and they got into that player's face. And I think the player actually got in trouble by the league. But I was out for a while. My face was black and blue. My eye was red. Luckily, by a miracle, I didn't have to have like surgery on my face. It healed very well. That's a miracle, definitely. But it taught me to take pain and be able to know that if you're going to be in this sport, you need to be able to take the consequences that come with it. I could have wrapped it up and hung up the cleats there, but I didn't. I really started getting a lot of playing time my junior and senior year, starting for the team my junior and senior year. I think a thing that taught me too was I needed to be able to accept change within the team. I really wanted to play wing, which is a position on the outside that scores a lot. It's like a wide receiver in football. They score a lot. They have a lot of highlight plays. They're maybe one of the faster guys. I really wanted to play that position, but I needed to accept that the team didn't need that at the time. They needed a fullback, which is a more of a defensive position. It's like a safety in football that really hangs back and protects the offense protects the team from the offense if the offense breaks through, much like a safety. And between my sophomore and junior season, I accepted that. I said, hey, all right, I will take the position that maybe I wasn't so used to. I learned that, and that's when I got playing time, and that's when the team did really well too. Again, the whole story of my rugby journey is that unexpected things happen and you need to be able to roll with the punches. And if you don't do it, right? If I just really was stubborn and wanted to play wing, I wouldn't get playing time. I wouldn't have the experience I did. I would be pouting with my arms across my chest. But I took that feedback. Hey, I think you'd be better at this position. The team needs it. And that transitioned a lot. That experience of accepting that position change as trivial as it sounds to just rugby, it really changed to my career. Hey, I need to be on this team. Maybe I need to do this new sales tactic. Maybe I need to try this new skill out, right? Or this new process. And it's helped me know that if I stay stagnant with one thing that I think is making me successful, I'm really closing doors to other things that I'm missing out on.
Excellent. You're working for us. You're at Mobile Iron.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about what you did there and what you're proud of. Because you worked for them exclusively, then you got converted. Talk a little bit about that process and that transition.
Yeah, absolutely. I felt lucky, first and foremost, that I had a good client. I had a great client. And there were some SDRs that maybe didn't have the best client. Again, I'm using my fingers as quotes because at the end of the day, it's the India, not the arrow. That's the metaphor I want to use. But I was really thankful that I had a good client. It was, the product was easy to sell. There was a need for it in the industry. Many businesses needed it specifically. Hey, an MDM, mobile device management, that's what Mobile Iron does. It's something that was mandated, right? So when you call into a business, they know exactly what the product is compared to these other startups or these smaller companies where you had to sell the idea as a whole. To Omar Guardado, who was my manager on the Mobile Iron side and who was the direct contact between Memory Blue and Mobile Iron, he was fantastic too. He taught me more than just the sales process because I was learning a lot of that at Mobile Iron. He taught me a lot about how to hold yourself professionally, right? How to act within a job office, how to interact with other departments at an organization. So he taught me a lot of the professional skills that you might not learn otherwise. So shout out to him. And at Memory Blue, right, the team that we had, there was four of us, I believe, we became really close and we were able to make calls together, hold ourselves accountable to the metrics that Omar was holding us to. And I think that we actually looked at our four group at Memory Blue, the Mobile Iron, as a separate entity within the Memory Blue office. We had our own metrics, we had our own product, and I think that honestly helped us four be more focused on what we needed to do to deliver for the client. There were times where I think that Mobile Iron wanted us to do something when Memory Blue wanted us to do something as well, something different. So there sometimes was a little bit of butting heads in terms of who do I listen to more? To listen to Joe, who's my MD, or to listen to Omar, who's the end client for you guys? I think that was a good experience as well to just learn where do I direct my focus? Where do I direct my attention to? I mean, the experience on a day-to-day basis, I was so lucky to have a great client. But I think the team aspect was really what brought it to the next level.
That's strong. When you were working with your Mobile Iron team, you also had some of these other Memory Blue guys who you were working with. Who were some of those folks? Do you remember any of them?
Yeah. So the people that were on the Mobile Iron client, like the people that were on the team.
And the people who were in the office, in the Memory Blue office.
So like me, Jay Hen was a Mobile Iron. Andy Gager and Janae Cambra and Caitlin Garish got hired already.
Yeah.
But I worked with them on a day-to-day basis. I think in my cohort, I guess you could say, that got hired out, it was Justin Henry, Jessica Hollinger, myself, and Amy Cooper. And those were us four got hired out at the same time. And like I said, that us four as a group joined and bonded together and really took the Mobile Iron experience seriously because we thought that, wow, if we do good here, we'll get hired at a company where we'll get shares. That's crazy to think about someone fresh out of college having shares at a business, being a stakeholder, having a full-time role somewhere. And I think that's the goal for many Memory Blue, what's the word I'm looking for, employees, is that, wow, I have an opportunity that Memory Blue is presenting me to be a full-time SDR or another role at a business that will give me benefits and give me these different features and I can jumpstart my career. Not saying that Memory Blue doesn't do that, but it gives you that experience of, wow, I can be a stakeholder at a business. I think that's something that I was taken back by. Like Memory Blue is presenting me this platform to excel. And I think it took some time as well to understand the gravity of what was in front of me too. Because out of college, what's your responsibility in college? It's to present, to go to class, get good grades and pass the final, right? But at Memory Blue and now stepping into the professional world, you're like, I'm actually changing businesses and providing metrics in a dollar figure. And that can give me a job after this. And obviously from Memory Blue, I've gone to Mobile Iron, to Samsara. And it all started with the platform that you guys built. Hats off to you guys too.
Memory Blue alumni, is your company actively trying to fill open sales roles with high achieving ballers? The Memory Blue Rising Stars program is a unique outplacement service designed to benefit our alumni and our tenured sales development professionals at the same time. Most of the SDRs that work on our client campaigns are under contract for a specific amount of time. Once the SDR's contract expires, he or she may wish to explore various new career opportunities. We call these well-trained hustlers our rising stars. And this is where you come in. Every single member of our alumni network has full access to hire our rising stars into their current company at zero cost. Whenever we have a new rising star available, we'll drop our full alumni group an email letting you know about the opportunity. This benefit gives alumni and their current employers a huge edge in closing the sales development talent gap. It also gives you the inside track on cashing in any referral fees associated with referring new hires. If you're looking for tomorrow's sales stars today, head over to memoryblue.com/alumni.
We'll get on to the mobile iron thing. One last thing, Memory Blue. You're being a little modest. Like, you were thought of highly in the Memory Blue circles. And you ended up being somebody's mentor, and you worked with some of those guys we haven't hit yet, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And we can ding the bell for these guys because they deserve it too. Kendrick Trotter is one of...
Trotter.
King Trot. He's one of the most inspiring people to this day. When he joined Memory Blue, I was close to being hired out already. So I think the conversations from Mobile Iron to hire me out were already happening. But Kendrick joins, and just by random chance, I actually don't know if this was selected on purpose, but I was his mentor. And we were assigned to work together to just talk about his experience the same way Joe did for me. So this was actually the first leadership experience that I had. I went on to be a team lead at Samsara, but this was the first time that someone was coming to me to pick my brain on my experience. And Kendrick and I really bonded on the idea of being both collegiate athletes. There were some days the sport came first in college. The sport came first. And there were some days that we were grinding in the classroom, on the field so much that it was part of who we were living and breathing, just this routine and this schedule. And something that I think he taught me as well is that there's a huge transition from that sport experience and that grind that you put in Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, so that you can compete and show out on the field on Saturday. To this day, Kendrick still posts pictures of, he says on social media, game day, right? When he goes into a client meeting or he goes into a new customer meeting. And it's that same mentality of, hey, we prepared all week for this, time to meet the client, time to meet the customer and deliver, right? And at the end of the day, for sales, there's a scoreboard, right? Either you put up your number or you didn't. And I think that's one thing that me and him also embraced was that there's going to be a scoreboard where some people are at the bottom, some people are at the top. And if you don't think about that scoreboard and you're just going through the motions, it's not going to turn out well. So having that competitive edge is something that him and I both fed off each other a lot. I just remember every time I was talking to him, he was taking notes and sponging it all up. Even though I think Kendrick's older than me, I'm not too sure, but he's just one of the most active listeners that I've ever encountered. Today, he's working on Us in Technology. If anyone hasn't checked that out, what Us in Technology is doing is it's really helping businesses diversify their sales culture and bring Black, Latino, Asian representation into sales. So he's actually the CEO of his own business and he's running that. And so that's so inspiring. And me and him are in communication now to work together. I'm going to help be a mentor in his program. I'm learning from him. He's learning from me. We're still in communication all the time. And again, it's just the platform of Memory Blue that brought us together. So for anyone that's listening to this, right, if they have a mentor to mentee relationship, do not take that for granted because you don't know what's going to come out of it. That person could be the CEO of a super successful business one day and you're going to want them to take you out to dinner. Keep it close.
Yeah, we love Kendrick and we admire what he's been doing with us at UIT and we're going to work with him on that too. All right, so you're at Mobile Iron, you're doing your thing. This is the transition we want to talk about. What you were doing at Mobile Iron, how you went from SDR to AE. Let's get into
it. Let's do it. I joined Mobile Iron and I come in as an SDR. And my motion that I'm doing on my first day as a Mobile Iron full employee, the motion that I'm doing is the same thing that I was doing at Memory Blue. So cool. I was used to it. Again, I was in a comfort zone. Again, I was doing something that I was used to and having success with, which as a theme of my story today, I think you'll see that when I am comfortable in roles is when, you know, things start to change a little bit and I kind of open up to a new experience where there is some doubt and there is some questioning. So I'm comfortable as an SDR. I'm really good. And obviously, what's the next step from SDR? It's an AE, right? So I'm like, okay, awesome. I can qualify well. I can prospect good. Customers love me. I'm easy to talk to. I'm going to be great as an AE, right? It's going to be fantastic. No problem. I join as I go through the interview process at Mobile Iron for an AE and I get the role. My job is now to close all new business that's coming in from our channel, Verizon. Right? Verizon's a channel partner. The way channel partners work is Verizon will source leads for Mobile Iron. They'll set me up with a meeting and I close the customer. Right? I go through the sales cycle. I go through the sales process. And I was really caught off guard by how I was not successful as an AE. I was qualifying and prospecting and showing the product, but I had no idea how to close. And I was so fixed on the demo and I was so fixed on getting them on the call, which was the Memory Blue way and the SDR way, but I just was not bringing in numbers and I was not doing it on the AE side. So much so where I didn't bring in a single dollar one quarter as an AE. And remember that scoreboard I was talking about just a few minutes ago. Imagine that scoreboard at the end of the quarter showing up and I'm at literally $0. It's embarrassing. It's hard to swallow that pill. It's hard to come home and enjoy your life outside of work when you know you're not delivering on the work side. It was tough. I was questioning if sales was even right for me, right? And even management at Mobile Iron was questioning, is Anton right for this job? Is Anton right for this closing role? And I really took a step back and I had to look at my goals and I had to look at what I was really trying to do and is sales. So I reached out to a few mentors. I reached out to a few people that were successful in the role. Jim Rose, he is an AE now outside of Mobile Iron. He was an AE there at a time. Sean Robinson, he was the channel manager for Verizon. These names might not, you know, ring bells in the Memory Blue side, but they were so important to my success. I would talk to Craig Ryan, another individual at Mobile Iron. These are AEs there that had success. And they're probably in the time that I was talking to them in their late 20s. And I was like 21, 22 at the time. And I said to them, like, dude, what are you guys doing to close business? Jessica Hollinger, for example, she moved to AE the same time that I did. And she was having so much success. And she was blowing up her number. She was having fun with it. And I just was so in my head. So the transition's tough. And the transition is something that I think SDRs to AEs need to be ready for, and which I wasn't. Again, I just thought it was going to be a smooth transition, just like I thought I'd be able to play ice hockey at Oregon, or how I thought I'd be able to go straight to Oregon instead of community college. I was wrong again. And I didn't take time to learn. I didn't take time to focus on that. So I did take a step back and the transition was tough, but eventually I was able to talk to these mentors and learn that closing is not about just presenting a product and hoping it sticks, but it's also about building a relationship with the customer. It's about finding pain. It's about thinking about what that other sales rep that you're competing with, what is that other sales rep doing? What are they doing that you're not? It's about building rapport in places that you don't think you're going to build it. Talk about things outside of work. Talk about things that are important to the customer. Be more personal. Right? Don't just be fixated on that number, but be fixated on solving a solution for a customer. And obviously that mindset takes time. That mindset takes a lot to switch from qualifying and prospecting to closing. It does take practice. I read Challenger Sale. That is something that it's a classic. And if you, it's talked about, you guys probably talk about it, Challenger Sale. And that helped me understand that if I'm not challenging the customer is not going to give me any time of day. Right? I'm not solving a need for them. If I'm not saying that, hey, this product is really going to change the way you do business. If I'm not challenging the customer in that way, how am I going to earn that respect from the customer? And that's what I wasn't doing. I wasn't earning the respect from customers. I was just another presenter. I wasn't even selling. I was presenting a product. I wasn't selling it to them. Talking to my mentors, those three guys I named really changed it for me. Reading Challenger Sale, it's such a classic book. It's a book that is, sometimes people think it's corny, but it changed the game for me. And I wrote the four Challenger Sale kind of keys on my desktop. And I thought about those as I went to every call. Am I showing something new to the customer? Am I making the customer feel uncomfortable with an idea that I'm presenting? You got to do these things if you want to earn that respect and mental, you know, mind share from a customer. The transition was hard, I'm not going to lie. But I think that, again, my failure, when I saw that zero on the scoreboard, helped me know that there was something I needed to change in my process. And maybe there's people listening to this podcast right now that have that zero. And I just don't want people to either also get discouraged by that zero, because that zero can also be the moment that you say, hey, there's something in my process that I need to change. It's that wake up moment. It's that moment for me when I got denied from the University of Oregon and changed my process, went to community college, saw that zero, reached out to my mentors, read some books, looked myself in the mirror. And it was the failure that made me successful, for sure. Sorry for the long-winded answer, but I'm...
we don't need to interrupt when someone's dropping knowledge like this.
Anton.
Yeah.
I'm always curious about those people who think the Challenger Sale is corny. I would love to get their list of books.
Right? Yeah. I'll bet you they don't even have a book.
Exactly. They don't even have a book. But here you are, you're taking it upon yourself to go and try to make yourself better. You're reading the books, and you're not just reading it to say you read it. You're applying it. You're putting that list on your desk. You're bringing those things into your deals. What sort of changes did you see start happening once you started implementing what you were teaching yourself?
I slowed down. And I think that's a huge thing for young sales professionals is we're not slowing down. We're not taking a breath before talking to a client. We're not understanding what this business does. For example, I had a demo this morning with a florist company. They have a great use case for Samsara. They have a great pain as well that they're experiencing. But if I don't take the time to understand what is this florist company in, I think they're in Missouri, they're in St. Louis. What is this florist company? How do they operate? It's a family business. Who are the people involved? What do they care about? If I'm not slowing down to think about those things, one, I'm not going to build rapport with the customer. And if you don't build rapport with a customer, you have no right to challenge them. Because if you challenge a customer with no rapport, you're just being disrespectful. But if you have built that relationship with a customer and learn about the name of this business here, Walter Knoll Florist. It's a sixth generational company. The owner is Walter Knoll III, right? This is a family-run business, right? If I treat it as just an enterprise where I'm just another sales rep, I'm not going to earn their trust. If I want to go into this call and challenge them, I need to be personal and trustworthy to begin with. And that means small things. I don't know, on the next demo, sharing my camera, showing them my face. I don't know, sending them maybe a note, a t-shirt package, which we do at Samsara. Just doing something different because I took the time to know what this business is about. And that slowing down is, I think, what I wasn't doing. I was going into every deal with a blueprint. This is what it's supposed to be. And this is what I learned from this training at this time, which are important. But you need to be flexible and slow down and think about who you're talking to. And I think one thing, it sounds corny, but I always think, if my mom and dad ran a small business or a business in general, how would I want someone to talk to them? How would I want someone to talk to my mom and dad if they were trying to sell mobile iron, for example? I wasn't doing that. I was just going quick, diving head in, which in Silicon Valley is what's taught, right? Bang the phones, hit dials, get your numbers out there, which is all good things. But if you don't have the soft skills to earn that trust with a customer and think about what their business is about, it's not going to go anywhere. So that's the first thing I learned when I really dove into Challenger. I think that's one of the most important things.
What sort of results did you see once you started applying this?
I saw that when I asked for the business, it was so much more received, right? Because when I asked for the business, that customer on the other end of the phone said, Anton he cared about the pain in my business. He cared about how my business operates rather than just how his product would fit. Anton cared a lot about me and what my stake is with this pain. And you guys teed it, the three levels of pain. It goes from, and you know, forgive me if I miss this, but it's financial to personal to emotional, I think, something like that. And I wasn't tapping into the bottom half of that iceberg. But when you slow down and you tap into that and you genuinely show your care for these businesses, when you ask for the business at the end, they're like, no doubt. Anton's been so helpful and thoughtful through this whole process. I trust signing up with him because I know that my business is in good hands. And it's so much easier asking for the business too when you take the time to learn about the customer, learn about what they are doing on a operational level. And take this, no offense in any way at all from the Memory Blue side, but going from blitzing to 100 calls a day and sending out the emails, having to go in to ask for business, right? There's some steps in there. there's some things in there that need to be practiced and worked on, like the soft skills, right? Like rapport building, slowing down. And those things come with experience only, I think.
Let's hit that. That's really big because you said it very succinctly. Those things come with experience only. We've got this group of SDRs who are doing the blitzing, learning the habits, the grind, learning opening statements, learning how to be comfortable with silence, right? Learning how to ask questions, learning a little bit about the pain funnel.
Yep.
But the things that they need to learn to get to the next level, they want to go. And those are the types of people we look for. And those are people that get successful in that role. How do you tell an SU, Anton, 4 years ago at Memory Blue, or people who's listening and thinking about coming to work at Memory Blue, or an SDR now, to be patient. And it only comes with time.
Cool. So experience, I think, is the key word here. Because the skills that I learned at Memory Blue to hammer the phones, Joe Reeves style, coming in with his sunglasses and his hat, and he would block out the world to do his job. those skills that I learned at Memory Blue are irreplaceable. And there are no business today that push a more grind mentality than you guys. Because when I went to Mobile Iron, when I went to Samsara, the amount of calls that they were asking for was like 30, 40, 50. And to them, 50 calls was a lot of calls. But I'm like scratching my head. Like, I was doing 100 in Memory Blue and I got used to that. So I want the SDRs listening to this to know that the skill set that they are learning right now is so valuable. But to also, I just want the SDRs to know that the skills they're learning now are so important, but to also know that they are not learning the full closing skills yet. And that is going to come from them taking the time to learn it. You guys do a fantastic job of teaching those skills on a literally daily check-in, right? But when you go to a closing role, there's not going to be someone there to say, hey, did you do your follow-up call? Did you research about the business in this way? That's up to you. And I think it comes with slowing down again and being able to understand that you don't know everything. And you could have been the number one SDR at said company, but you're going to go to the bottom of the barrel for the next AE position. And it takes being humble as well to know that, hey, I was at the top of the board for setting meetings, but now I'm at the bottom for actually bringing in revenue. And I think that's what's something super interesting about sales is that everyone at the company knows where everyone is. I mean, the SDRs at Memory Blue probably check the scoreboard every day. I check the leaderboard as well frequently. And obviously it's so easy to check when you're at the top, but you have to embrace checking when you're at the bottom too, to know that, hey, there's something that I need to do to change my game, to change my flow. There's some great friends of mine that have left the sales career because they just weren't able to deal with that zero on the scoreboard or see them at the bottom of the barrel. And they're still my friends, obviously, but I think that being in sales is unique. And I think being in sales teaches this grit over time. So I think that the SDRs in Memory Blue today just need to understand that, yes, you could be the top SDR right now, but there's going to come a time, hopefully soon, where you're going to be at zero. And I hope that everyone is successful all the time, but I want people to embrace the zero. I think that's something that I try to live by, is embrace the zero, embrace that bottom of the scoreboard, because there's two ways you can deal with it. You embrace it and you learn from it and you get to the top, or you leave and you don't change your process and you're still at zero. And sometimes that's good for some people. Maybe sales isn't the right path for you too. You guys probably started trying to convince businesses that, hey, I have a cheaper way to provide you SDRs. And honestly, when I was thinking to myself, like, wow, Mark and Chris came up with this such innovative way to save on like sales operating costs, but you guys probably had a lot of no's in your face too. And here you guys are today. Got to embrace the zero. Because if you don't, it's going to hurt.
You might be out of the game a little prematurely.
Yeah. And I'm sure there's some people in the world that could have been great sales professionals, but just couldn't take the negative that comes with it. And sales is tough because, for example, I just got promoted from an AE1 for small, medium business to a senior account executive role. For the small, medium business, I was the number one sales rep. It was awesome seeing my name at the top, but this is small, medium business. I go up to the more senior side and I'm at the bottom, and I just started 2 weeks ago. So, you know, still building my book of business, but I'm going through that same transition right now where I don't have a giant customer that's going to come and just have an easy upsell and boom, I have a big deal. I have to build that book of business from the ground up. And I think that's something that sales managers also look for, right? Who are my reps that have the cards against them? Who are my reps that have to build their book from the ground up? And how are they dealing with that? Are they stressed out and negative about it? Or are they grinding under pressure? And you know what they say, no pressure, no diamonds. And I think that the diamonds come from those hard times, from that zero, for sure.
So tell us a little bit, Anton, what are you doing now? I say, I'm sorry, you hit on it, but tell us a little more detail, because people always wonder, what do I do after with the Mobile Iron?
Yep.
Did a great job for them. And then I know you always wanted to move to San Francisco.
Yep.
And you found a company with an headquartered in San Francisco. And
yeah.
You've been moved up the food chain there. So what are you doing now? Break it down for us a little.
Absolutely. So it was April of 2019. So almost 2 years I'll be at Samsara. And when Samsara reached out to me, I was in a really good spot at Mobile Iron. I was comfortable. My numbers were finally coming in. And again, the story of my career path, it's the same. I was in a comfortable spot. And I decided to go to an uncomfortable place. So I literally went to the Samsara interview saying, all right, these guys have to sell me on it. These guys have to sell me on the company, on the product, on the vibe. And I walked in. I had interviews with three managers there. One manager who's, I don't know, maybe he's going to listen to this. I'll send him the link. I'll let him do it. His name is Jeff Harrington. And he actually runs the San Jose Samsara office. And he interviewed me. And the manager experience that I got from him, he ended up being my direct manager, was just such a great experience where I learned so much. I got the role, right? Started from the bottom, had to work my way to the top, and we were on monthly quotas. This was challenging, right? So we had to bring in X amount of dollars. It was around, if I do the math right now, 168, there's probably, how many work days are there in a normal month? Like
21.
21? Cool. So we had to bring in $35,000 ACV, annual, you know, contract value per month. And we're selling into small, medium businesses. And for people who don't know what Samsara does, we're a fleet management solution. My story is always this. If you own a bakery and you have 10 trucks delivering baked goods around Washington, D.C., for example, as the business owner, you want to track those trucks, right? Are they safe on the road? Are they efficient? Are they on time? Samsara serves those kind of clients. And obviously, we have huge clients like ABF Freight or Doran Transfer that have thousands of vehicles. For small, medium business, I have to bring in $35,000 a month. There was one quarter where I come into work on Friday and I had $32,000. I was not going to hit quota. So I'm stressing out. It's Friday of the last day of the quarter. And I just said, you know what? I'm just going to tap in to what I learned at Memory Blue. I'm going to hit the phones. I'm going to see who out there needs it. And at this point, it's 6 hours left until the end of the quarter. And this was July of 2019. I remember specifically. All my friends, they're at quota, right? And they're enjoying their Friday. And I still need $3,000 more. I hit the phones. I was able to schedule a meeting. And luckily, the Samsara product, it delivers value so much so that a business owner is like, yeah, I'll buy this right now. And luckily, when the bell rung at Friday afternoon, I was past that 35 mark. Honestly, nice. You know what? I never thought about it until this moment where I think that the Memory Blue kind of energy tapped into it right there, where I needed to hit the phones. I needed to get that one more conversation. I needed to grind it out. And I was able to do that. And I think that is something I definitely learned from you guys. So again, hats off.
Nah, come on. Everybody learns stuff from us, but not everyone applies it the same way or at all. So you applied it. It's obviously paying off.
Yeah, it was good. So we went from monthly quotas to quarterly quotas. I was in the, it's called AE1, AE1, AE2. I was in the AE1 segment for 21 months, good amount of time. I earned President's Club this last quarter, which is top 1% of sales reps. So there's two clubs, Winner's Circle, which is top 10%, and then President's Club, which is 1%. And when I started at Samsara, I never thought that I would get to the top 1%. But lo and behold, and by hard work and just by team effort of people around me, it's not all me, it was my team that helped me out. I got to that 1% mark, and I'll be going to hopefully COVID-free Hawaii in September. But I just never thought I'd really get to that level. And seeing myself at the top of the leaderboard for AE1 was fantastic. And looking back at all the times that I failed and wasn't able to bring that number in when I had that zero at the end of the quarter for Mobile Iron. I'm looking back to last quarter when they send me these plaques and these awards. When you look at it and you think, wow, this is awesome. Like, I'm never going to leave AE1, right? This is the best. Boom. The next day after earning President's Club, I go to AE2 and I'm at the bottom now. And I'm grinding to build my book of business. And I'm probably not going to get any recognition for a while. Some deals will come in and maybe I will, but I think that's something that I've learned up to this point is that I need to embrace the grinding without any recognition, embrace not being at the top of the leaderboard for a while. Because once you understand that, hey, this is the situation I'm in, then the accolades will come after that. I'm in that spot now where no recognition, just building my book of business. And hopefully in the next year, 2 years, then I can climb the ranks again. But we'll see. It comes down to if I have to reschedule any more demos for podcasts with you guys, but we'll see.
Hey, Anton, earlier you were talking about when you first started your career as an SDR and how quickly you realized that you were actually making a difference. When we were preparing for this, you talked about when you were a Memory Blue SDR, how you surfaced a huge opportunity and it ultimately ended up closing for your client. Can you talk a little bit about that story?
Sure. So I was the enterprise SDR at Memory Blue for the time, and I was helping a sales rep by the name of Cody Hubbard. Cody Hubbard, he handled the TOLA region, I think that's what they call it. And there's a company that many of us know called Texas Instruments. They build, we think they just build calculators, but really they build semiconductors to help run small technologies and small equipment. And all I knew about them was a calculator company that had a ton of customers to call or a ton of contacts to call, right? So I see Texas Instruments and I see, wow, all right, I'm going to bang out my 100 calls just by hitting up this company right here. And I call in the Texas Instruments for maybe 1 week, 2 weeks. And I end up setting a demo with one of the mobile security officers at Texas Instruments. End up going through the demo and Cody Hubbard leads the demo for them. But as a Memory Blue SDR, I booked it and it occurred. Boom. it happened, right? For me, that's all of it. And as a new college grad, I did what I needed to do. I got my booking, it occurred. I didn't think any more of it. I get hired by Mobile Iron. I'm working, and lo and behold, I start to hear more rumblings of Texas Instruments. So they're actually going to trial our products now. Oh, wow. They're going to trial our new Mobile Iron Access feature. Oh, wow. They're going to trial our Platinum bundle. So they're building and building, and this deal is getting larger and larger. And as someone who has their name tied to it on Salesforce, it's a proud moment where you're seeing this deal go through the stages, and you can see opportunity created. Anton Cardenas back in the day, and Cody ends up closing it for close to $1 million. And I don't want to say that it would never have happened because of the cold call that I placed, but maybe Texas Instruments would have reached out or another Mobile Iron SDR would have called. But it was a really proud moment for me to say, wow, from the Memory Blue cubicle right there in downtown San Jose next to Crazy Joe Reeves, I booked this demo for Cody Hubbard that ended up turning to a real opportunity that became a huge revenue generating deal. And it all started with Memory Blue again. So that was really special. I still bring that up. On interviews, when people ask you what are some moments that you're proud of, I still bring that up because the SDR grind is something that I think is overlooked a lot of times in a interview process or the next step, but it really shows dedication to outbounding, dedication to getting the door closed in your face. I don't know how many times I've received bad words on email from reaching out. So it's being able to embrace that. But yeah, that was an awesome experience.
So I think that the fact that you serve time as an SDR has really helped you out in many ways. Now you have the luxury of having SDR support you and tee up meetings for you. So talk a little bit about what it's like being an AE and knowing what it's like being an SDR, if you could share a little bit of.
Yeah, absolutely. At Samsara, the way it works is there's a group of maybe 10 to 15 SDRs. We call them ADRs at Samsara. Account development that call for the central region, which is my region. And they're calling into mid-market account businesses, which is what I service. I'm working online. All of a sudden, my inbound line rings and I pick up the phone and it's an SDR on the other side of the line. Hey, I just made this cold call. This is Mark on the other side of the phone. He owns a 70 vehicle fleet. He needs these needs. And I've been calling into them for about a week and they agreed to a demo. So right then and there, I'm going to talk to this client. And it was all 100% sourced from the ADR. I could have literally been doing anything else. And all of a sudden, there's a deal on my plate. So if it wasn't for the ADR team of 10 to 15, I would be needing to make all these calls myself. And luckily, Samsara has a structure in place that has a great ADR system. ADR, SDR, same thing. But I think that nowadays, AEs tend to overlook the importance of an SDR sometimes. And they, lack for a better term, disrespect the grind that the SDR does for the AE, where at the end of the quarter, end of the year, the accolades always go to the AE, but never the SDR. And, you know, Samsara does a good job of doing those accolades. For example, Winner Circle for the top 10 sales reps, also ADRs to get eligible for that. They do a good job of congratulating them. But I think a lot of times AE just takes the deal and doesn't really think about the work that went in from the ADR perspective. So what I like to do is grow relationships with the ADRs and talk to them about, hey, who are you calling? What are the deals you're working on? How can I be a better AE to you? How can I help qualify an opportunity? Or how can I help you grow your book of business? ADRs talk to me a lot about my process and how I'm able to impart my wisdom on them a little bit. So I think that you scratch my back, I scratch yours. If AEs in general just don't respect the SDR, ADR grind, they're not going to get that love when a deal needs to be sent up. Or there's some companies that have a 1-to-1 ADR to AE ratio, SDR to AE ratio. Some companies have that. And if the AE doesn't treat the SDR on the same playing field as a teammate on the field, that AE is not going to get fed the way he or she wants. And it goes back to the rugby experience that I had is if the AE and the ADR aren't tight and succinct, they're going to be aiming in two different directions and not going to be working closely together. I had the pleasure of having great AEs, Jim Rose, who I said before, Sean Robinson. These are people that took me under their wing and who mentored me. And I encourage all ADRs to seek out those relationships too, because there's people at every company that are willing to talk, are willing to help, are willing to put SDRs under their wing. And I think SDRs are doing themselves a disservice if they don't reach out and talk to people with that experience. So I don't know, maybe you guys can incorporate that. Hey, for the AEs that you guys support at your said clients, set up meetings with them, talk about their process, get under their wing, add them on LinkedIn, something like that. Because that was one thing I wasn't doing when I wasn't successful. I wasn't reaching out to people that have been successful in the role. And I started getting successful when I started picking brains of people and getting out of my own headspace, things like that.
Yeah, that's good advice. We're definitely trying to do that. It comes secondary to actually booking and occurring the meetings. Sometimes it's easier when you're doing that, but that's definitely something that we preach. And I had an interview this morning, internal interview was with one of the SDRs. That's one of her key priorities.
Nice. Fantastic. And you do that today too. Even for people like you guys, thank you so much for reaching out to me to do this, you know, podcast. When I think about it, I'm like, Mark and Chris are a resource. I need to talk to them. They're business owners of their own organization. That's a goal that I have one day, is to be my own boss. You guys will be hearing from me a lot more after this.
All right, Anton. Anytime, man. Hey, okay. Anton, I wrap things up. What do you do outside the office to like kind of also handle, make sure you take care of yourself? Besides being a season ticket holder. To this, you unzip your as you unzip your pattern, your fleece there, I can see the Dubs t-shirt.
Yes, sir.
So talk a little bit about what you do to keep your mind and your body.
Yeah, absolutely.
Advice for people.
Just life outside of work. Wow. COVID. Let's talk about that. What work from home did. When I was working at the Samsara office, right, it was so fast paced where get to work, grinding at the desk, leaving work, hitting the gym, maybe hitting the bar, and going to a Giants game or something like that. But with COVID and everything that slowed down, I was able to really focus and internalize more as to what I really like to do. It's not, what do my desk mates want to drag me into? What do I want to do with the group of people that are just having fun? What do I want to do? What do I want to slow down? I got a dog, as you guys saw, a Bernese Mountain Dog. That was on March 16th was when I got her. So it's almost a year that I've had her. And that has been such an amazing experience with the work from home culture and everything like that. I am a season ticket holder to the Warriors. One goal I had of mine was to be a season ticket holder to a team. Giants, Sharks, Warriors, those are my squads.
Raiders.
I was thinking, Raiders. No, Niners.
The Raiders, plus the Raiders left.
Yeah, they left. There's a funny joke that I have a group chat with some friends, and there's a diehard Raider fan in the group chat, and everyone just always texts that person, they left you. Just to rub it in a little bit. But that was a goal of mine, was to be a season ticket holder for a sports team. And not the Warriors moved to the city. I moved to the city. Some things worked out with my uncle, who was a season ticket holder. He gave me his rights. I was able to save up some money, and with the blessing of my job now, I was able to afford it. So now I feel like I have a stake in the Dubs. So whenever they come on TV, I have a big joy in watching them. I just got engaged last October.
Yeah.
Congratulations. So,
thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. And it's fun being able to just be domestic a little bit, cook up a good dinner, make the house nice. Take care of things that didn't be taken care of. For example, this sounds nasty, but some mold started growing like in our hallway. I got that taken care of. All I had to do was really call the landlord, but still it makes you feel like you are a little bit more responsible, right? And I try to get 60 minutes of exercise in a day. As you can see behind me here, I got the Peloton. Highly recommend anyone getting that, especially with work from home. Honestly, reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'll give you a referral code. Mark and Chris, you too. The referral code is there for you guys. I highly recommend it. It's cool. You hop on, you get your sweat in, and you hop off. But it's fun to be able to set goals and have measurable things that you're striving for. You can see that chessboard right there.
The Queen's Gambit.
Queen's Gambit, yeah. Honestly, after I watched Queen's Gambit, I was like, you know what? I need to get back into the chess game. And Chrissy, my fiance, we play probably a couple times a week. I'm learning new moves, new strategies. But I think one thing I learned in 2020 was that it's okay to just chill and just relax. And sometimes people in sales think that part of sales is going out to the bar and taking shots and hanging out with the team, which is awesome. Those are all great things, right? Team camaraderie is fantastic. But I think one thing about sales that I've experienced is if I'm able to just relax and slow down and be in a good mental space, when I have conversations with customers, I'm being more genuine. I'm being more authentic. And I've learned to just relax a lot more. Does that answer your question? I'm trying to think of other passions that I do.
Hey, Anton, talk to the listeners a little bit about how sort of mental strength that you need to have to continue to play chess knowing you're going to lose.
Chessy is, you can get humiliated on there. Chess360 is some pros. It's an online platform, right? And you go there to play and you can get beat in 5, 6, 7 moves. Oh my God. And sometimes like I go on YouTube, it was hilarious. So some of my buddies were over and we were just, you know, hanging out. We go on YouTube and they're like, Anton, what the hell is this? And the first 3 searches on my YouTube were 5 move checkmate, 10 move checkmate. And I was like watching YouTube to learn these and they're still not clicking in my head. Anyone that wants to be mentally challenged and humiliated and humbled, play chess against someone good. Play chess against someone good. I think it teaches a lot of life lessons as well.
All right.
Very good, Anton. Great.
Anton.
Thank you, guys. I think I can beat both of you guys in chess, though. I'll take you guys both up. Yeah.
Definitely.
You can do both of us at once in speed chess. I'll be out in 2 moves.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Thank you guys so much for having me. It was a pleasure. Again, I think anyone in the Memory Blue experience today, just know that you have a amazing just jump pad opportunity to really get yourself off the ground and learn skills that are not taught anywhere else. Some days 100 calls seems like a lot and it seems busy work, but just embrace the grind and embrace the zero. So thank you, Mark and Chris. I appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, Anton. Keep killing it. Sir.
Thank you.
Anton, that was beautiful. Thank you very much for the time and the insight.
Thank you, guys.
Taking an individual's raw potential and turning them into a thriving sales professional takes the right training. That's where Memory Blue Academy comes in. Memory Blue Academy teaches participants the fundamentals of sales development and all aspects of a lead generation role, regardless of the level of professional experience or background. The course kicks off with a 2-day intensive boot camp session, followed by a 6-week ongoing educational program. This is the program every single Memory Blue SDR undergoes at the onset of their tenure. The curriculum covers a wide range of topics, including list building, objection handling, effective sales emails, and more. Participants will be shown how to successfully execute a diverse set of sales activities in a very short time, experiencing tangible and lasting skill growth. To learn more and sign up for a seat in an upcoming session, head to memoryblue.com/academy. Thanks for listening to Tech Sales is for Hustlers. Please subscribe and leave a 5-star review after the beep.